The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Merkle Media.
Everybody, this is Joel Thomas, and this is Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? First, I want to say thanks to everybody who's been giving 5-star reviews across the board on all the platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other of your favorite podcast streaming apps. I just want to say thank you so much. You have helped the show grow so much in just a little over half of a year, and it's been an amazing ride so far, and I look for an even longer journey with all of you. If you're a follower of the show and you haven't given a 5-star review, please go give a 5-star review on whatever platform you're on right now. And if you're new here, wait till you listen to the show, and if you liked it, then go give a 5-star review. I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And for the people that have been asking, how can I donate to the show to help the show grow financially? There's a couple ways you can do it. You can go to YouTube. You can become a member there. There's several different tiers. Also, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/freetherabbits, and you can give a one-time donation, or you can set up a new monthly donation if you'd like to donate monthly. I appreciate everything you guys are doing for the show. Now let's get into it. Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Joel Thomas, and we are back this week with another episode. I'm just giving you guys a heads up this week. I have been battling some sort of illness or sickness or something. I'm not really sure what it is. Went out of town this past weekend, came back, and
I really wasn't feeling good under the weather, kept battling it. And then I woke up the day I was going to record this and still feeling pretty bad, actually worse, but I was able to get it together and record so I would have an episode for you guys on Monday. And I think we're going to do something a little bit different. I've had several people reach out to me since I started the podcast and are asking, when am I going to do an episode about my life, about what brought me to walking away from God, what happened during that period of time, and then what brought me back to God. And I thought today would be a good day to do that, especially since this week I've been battling whatever's going on. And I figured this would be a good way to tell the story. At least I'm telling, you know, a part of what I've been through so you guys can understand a lot of why I think the way I do now. And it really starts when I was a child. I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was a preacher. My mom was a music minister off and on throughout my childhood. My dad pastored at several different churches, so I moved around a lot as a kid. He bounced around from being a pastor at churches to being an evangelist, which meant he was on the road a lot, preaching at different churches. Now, growing up in that environment was definitely interesting for myself and my sister, because it's something that a lot of people don't understand until they actually go through it. There's a lot of pressure being a quote-unquote preacher's kid, and especially when your father is the pastor of a predominantly large church in the area. And again, he preached at many different churches, so it wasn't just that he preached at big churches, but he had smaller churches he was a pastor at as well. But just speaking of a few specific areas where he preached at pretty large churches in the area, you've got a limelight on you 24/7. Not only is the pastor and his wife, but the children do as well. So people put you on some sort of pedestal that you're supposed to obtain. And a lot of times what happens with that is being able to be human and make mistakes and be able to grow or grow up isn't really allowed. And not with everybody. And I don't want to say that that's indicative of everyone that I knew growing up, not by a long shot. As a matter of fact, in my older years, I look back on a lot of what I grew up in with very fond memories. I never had a really negative view of the church. One of the main reasons being is my father. My father was every bit of what he preached, still is to this day. And one of the things I can really respect of my father is the empathy and sympathy and love for people who are battling, trying to find their place with God. He knew what it was like to go through that. My dad has got a very, very interesting testimony about his time finding God. And part of that journey was becoming a drug dealer, moving into trying to become a Satan worshiper, and to the point to where he almost killed himself. But then he turned on television on the way out, on his way to do that. And there was a preacher preaching behind him. And that preacher said, "Does anyone out there need help?" In that moment, my father turned around and he gave his life to Christ. So if it wasn't for that turning on of the television and a pastor saying, "Does anyone out there need help?" I wouldn't even be here today. And my father was deeply entrenched into occult practices, specifically trying to become a part of the Church of Satan at the time with the people that were trying to bring him in. But even before that, he dabbled in different occult dealings. I wouldn't say practices. From my understanding from my father, that he wasn't actually seeking out those things at that time, but he knew people that did practice some of these magical practices, and he saw some very weird things. And specifically, when he went into becoming a Satan worshiper, he had tons of different experiences that can only be described as supernatural. So I heard these stories all the time growing up as a kid. Naturally, as a child, you're going to be very interested in things that are occulted or esoteric. That's just a natural human reaction. My father wouldn't let me get into any of his research books on any of that until I turned 18. And then he opened up that part of his library to let me read. And again, I grew up in this Christian environment. It was very strict at some times, for sure. And I think that your parents only do the best that they know to do, just like I've done with my children, just like anyone else with their children. And we all make mistakes. And we can all look back on those times and say, well, this could have been done better. Or if this had been done, maybe I wouldn't have done that. But that's neither here nor there. It's knowing how to understand your reactions to certain things and why you decided to go down different roads for different motivations. And I've spent a lot of the past 3 or 4 years really unpacking a lot of those things. Because as I started growing closer to God, again, after many, 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 many years away, I really wanted to start understanding why that I walked away. And part of that was understanding the past and understanding what was it that pushed me into wanting to basically go into business for myself. Well, in high school, I wanted to be a basketball star. That was my one main true goal outside of academics, which I was really, really good at in high school. Graduated with honors, got academic scholarships as well as other scholarships as well. But on the way to do that, I wanted to be a basketball star, and I went through a lot of trials and tribulations, but eventually by my senior year, I became what I wanted to be in the basketball world. As a matter of fact, I was offered to play for a now Division II school, and I went off to college with every intention of making my parents proud, making myself proud, and really following this road of basketball. I knew I wouldn't make it to the NBA or anything close to that, but I was achieving a very achievable goal that I had pushed myself into doing, was becoming a collegiate athlete in basketball. Well, one thing I was very unprepared for was becoming a collegiate athlete a couple states away from where I lived, and honestly being about 5-6 hours away from where I lived. And again, back to my childhood, it was very strict in a lot of ways. I really wasn't allowed to go places or do things without my parents knowing every little thing that was going on. A lot of check-ins. There were times I had to be home where other kids were allowed to be out. Again, not saying any of that's necessarily good or bad, but when you have those kind of restrictions and then you go into an environment where there's zero restrictions and then you're a college athlete where everything's laid at your feet and you don't even know what those things are until you're put in those situations. Well, I get to college and I'm instantly thrown into the mix with all these other college athletes. And on a basketball team, you don't have a lot of players. You have 12 to 15 players, depending on the league that you're in. And generally speaking, it's a pretty tight-knit group. Obviously, some guys will be tighter than other guys would be, but generally speaking, everybody knows each other pretty well. It's a little bit different than being on a football team where you have, you know, 70, 80 people on a team, you know, some teams 50, whatever, depending on the league, and you don't know people as well. So I get to college and I basically just go full in on partying and playing ball. And part of that was really finding an affinity towards hip hop music. I already loved hip hop music before I went to college, but when I went to college was when I really got introduced to a myriad of different artists. All of them my parents wouldn't let me listen to. So again, I wasn't that seasoned when it came to being out in the real world and seeing real life situations arise and being able to handle it as a Christian, because there's no way that you can foresee what you're going to have to deal with until you get put in those situations. And I can say that a lot of what shaped me was in high school, because I always felt slighted when it came to basketball. There were many times where I might be the best player on the court or performing as the best player on the court, but because of politics or whatever else, I wasn't allowed to be in the position that I thought deep down that I should have. And that shaped a lot of my motivations going forward, because I always felt slighted, always felt like that what I wanted to achieve was always being ripped out from under me. So when you feel that way a lot, you start acting on it. And when I went to college, it wasn't that way. I had a lot going for me, but I still had that in the back of my head, this chip on my shoulder, this very driven mentality to get what I'm going to get by any means necessary. And that definitely carried my thought patterns for most of my life. Now, I get to school and one of the star basketball players on the team, he and I were hanging out and he started talking about, hey man, you ever freestyled? And I didn't even know what freestyling was at the time. I was very young when I went off to college. I wasn't 18. I was 17 when I went off to college. I was younger than most. And I was very unaware of a lot of things, even when it came to music when I got to college. So he went to the store with his fake ID, got a six pack of Bud Light, I think it was. And we were drinking outside of the campus and we started freestyling in the car. I had no idea what I was doing, but I loved rap. I loved hip hop. I just felt like it spoke to me. And I think with any kind of music, it's that way with somebody. Whenever they find the type of music they like or genres, because I like multiple different genres of music, when you have music that resonates with you, you start feeding your emotions into that music. That's just a natural reaction. And that's what I did. Now, after my first semester, my grades were awful. So I was literally on the fringes of losing my academic scholarship, which was part of the scholarship that I had to go to school. So my parents obviously weren't very happy, but I promised them, hey, I can get the grades up, which I could. There was definitely a pathway forward to get the grades back up where they needed to go. But I went back after the first semester and just went to partying again and gotten a little bit of trouble here and there, but nothing crazy. And I realized that the last month, month and a half, that I was not going to get the grades up where I needed to go because I just had kept spiraling out. So I decided that what's going to be my next phase, because my parents kind of warned me that they weren't going to send me back to school if I couldn't get my grades up. So I really started gravitating to hip hop. I wanted to be a rapper, which is kind of crazy, especially when you think about it, a kid who grew up in a country / suburban home with a dad who's a preacher, mom, music minister, and I'm gravitating to something that, frankly, I didn't grow up around. But that's important to the story because that is a nasty beast that fed itself constantly. It was me trying to prove that what I'm rapping about, I am, and I became that. So I get back from school after a couple of semesters. Grades are awful. Coaching the basketball team still wanted me to play there. He felt like I would do well if I came back again. My parents were against it, and I went headlong into hip hop. At the time, they didn't know I was even pursuing that, and they ended up finding out in a really funny way. Now I'm looking back on it. I was at church because they still required me to go to church, even though I didn't want to go. And I had wrote a note to a friend on the back of one of those old offering envelopes, and I'd kept it in my pocket. So I was telling him that I was going to be a rapper, and they found it, and it became a whole deal, as it did in my family. You know, sometimes, and I've learned with my kids, sometimes when they say certain things they want to do or whatever, sometimes I just let the wind go out of the sails on certain things, because I know if I push them too hard one direction, it's going to make them want to do it more. Because you tell them no, that's just part of human nature. You have a rebelliousness inside of you and you're going to do the opposite of it. And I feel like that was a lot of it. Like once I was challenged that I shouldn't do it. And then it was also the next challenge was you have a 1 in 1 million chance to do it. Well, I'm about to be the 1 in 1 million then. Now, part of the deal of me coming home was I needed to go to another college and get my grades up. And I needed to perform at a level that I was capable of, or I'd be out of the house. Well, I did. I actually performed to the level that I was capable of. I was making straight A's at one of the community colleges that was in the area. But because I was still doing music, I was told that I still had to leave. So at that point, I was pretty angry because I felt like that I was upholding my end of the bargain by having these straight A's in achieving what I was asked to achieve. But just because I wanted to do music, I was asked to leave. And so I did. I ended up getting an apartment with one of my good friends at the time. And I quit school. I was working at restaurants and I was just pursuing music. Now, during all this time, I had connected with some guys who were artists themselves, who had brought me into their fold. Now, I was the only white guy that was brought in. That's important to the story throughout because I need to explain certain parts of my life so people understand what those things mean. So those guys brought me in and for the most part connected to me just like a brother. And I would say the guys that still were doing music throughout the next few years with me, absolutely. You know, we didn't even look at the fact that we were of different races outside of, you know, the jokes that we would have or whatever else. It was just a camaraderie and we all had a centralized goal and where we wanted to get to musically. And I really worked on my craft. I really honed on my craft. Well, during that period of time where I was staying at this particular apartment with my good friend Travis at the time, I ended up getting in some pretty big trouble. There was a girl who kind of hung out with us here and there that knew us, and her brother had gotten in trouble with the law. And to get him out of trouble, and we found all of this retrospectively later on, that she was going to set someone up, a big drug dealer in town. Now, I'm going to say this right here and now. I've never sold drugs. I've never been a drug dealer. I knew a lot of drug dealers. Some of them are my very close friends, but that was one thing I wasn't willing to go down was be a drug dealer. I've done drugs for sure, but I've never been a drug dealer. That wasn't something that appealed to me. I just wanted to do music, talk about the things that I did. Obviously, there's a level of embellishment that you do on tracks to bring yourself up to that. So I came from a home that's not from the streets, that's not from that environment, but now I'm thrown into an environment with a bunch of guys that are like that. So then you become that. And I've known guys who have grown up with great childhoods and have turned into the opposite of that, depending on their choices. And basically, that's what I was doing. You know, for me, it was chasing women, experimenting with drugs. I say experimenting because I've never been hooked on any kind of narcotics and becoming an alcoholic and all of these things that come along with that persona. And frankly, when you're the one lone white guy in a group of a bunch of black dudes, and honestly, many, many other races and cultures, as I kept getting older, you do what you can to impress the people around you. And if that means you have to amp up 10 levels past them, you do that. And I did that consistently. I was always willing to take it to the next level because in that culture, I wanted to be the craziest. You want to be the crazy white dude because the crazy white dude you don't mess with. And I did everything to become that. But honestly, that was just a shell that I was building around myself really to protect a lot of loneliness and a lot of insecurities I had going on inside me. And believe me, I did talk about a lot of those insecurities and things on the tracks that I recorded because I tried to be as honest as possible with music. As much as I say embellishing in music, it really was more of an embellishment so then that I would become that. And I did. So I would say things on tracks. And if I had the opportunity to do them in real life, I did them. So then I could point and say, hey, I'm exactly what I'm rapping about. I'm practicing what I preach, which you see a lot in hip hop where guys don't actually do that. I was with a lot of dudes that lived that life. So you wanted to present yourself in the same way, or you would get outed as being a fraudulent or a fake. Well, back to the girl who set us up. She told the police officers that we were big time drug dealers, and they set up a sting. She came and bought a bunch of marijuana from my friend Travis while I was at work. I knew nothing this was going down. Honestly, I think about it now, and I definitely would have stopped the transaction from happening if I would have heard anything about this, because it was all very fishy. This girl shows up at the house with stacks of 100s. Again, I don't hear about this till later, but she doesn't have this kind of money. She never has. And Travis ends up selling her a minimal amount. It wasn't very much, but it was enough to say he made a transaction. So the police officers are watching us over the weekend. We did have a lot of people in and out that weekend because there were a lot of parties going on there. There wasn't any drug dealing going there from us at all, but it was enough for them to have a warrant to come up in the house. And the way it worked out, I left work with some old friends from high school. We were going back to my house to do what we always did, party. I get back there, open the door. There's police officers on the house. All my friends are handcuffed everywhere. They've got guns on me, and they check my pockets, and I had on me some narcotics, some ecstasy pills, which were really big at the time. MDMA. A lot of people will remember when Molly became really popular in the past 6-7 years. That was just a more powderized format of it. The old school ecstasy had a lot of different things mixed in it. So they found a couple of pills on me that I had literally bought that night, and those were felony charges per each pill. So we went down to the station. My buddy gets out on bail that night because, I mean, all they found in the house was, I think $15 worth of marijuana. So they were absolutely livid. They knew the girl, didn't tell them the truth. They knew it was a bad lead. But at this point, they've got me with a couple pills. They're like, hey, we're going to get whatever we can out of this. We're going to squeeze whatever we can out of this. And obviously, they're trying to get me to flip on anybody I know that's dealing or selling. And one of the things I will remember that my father telling me back when I was a kid was, if you ever do anything and get in trouble with the law, don't snitch. Take responsibility for what you did, because you're the one that got yourself in that predicament. And as a matter of fact, a couple of days later, my father ended up bailing me out, and he told me the same thing again, because I told him, hey, listen, the police are coming to me saying this. I'm not telling them anything. I refuse to even talk to him. And my dad said, good. He's like, because this is your fault. This isn't anyone else's fault. And he's right. And that's why I've always really stood firm in the fact that if you get yourself in trouble and you're the one that did it, then pointing a finger at somebody else to get yourself out of trouble, no matter how easy it sounds, isn't the right thing to do. You got to take responsibility for what you've done. So at that point, I get put on what they call house arrest, and I have to stay at my parents' house. Can't leave, got a curfew, got to be in. I think it was 11 o'clock every night, 10 o'clock every night. Can't remember unless I was at work. And until I went to court. So I ended up going to court. They put me on probation. And at that point, my parents give me another ultimatum, stop doing music or, you know, get out again. And I'm still in a very obstinate state. So I'm out. So I end up getting out on my own again, and I'm still chasing music. And during this period of time, I do make some pretty interesting connections when it comes to music. I met some guys who at the time were pretty big in the industry. One of them I did a track with later on down the road. I did a track with another guy who was very large in the industry at the time. And I'm really starting to flesh out how I want to get there in what I want to do musically. Well, I'm still on what they call first offender's probation, which basically means that the felony charge that I have will be washed clean away if I complete the parameters with the probation that's been given to me without getting into any more trouble. Well, let's just say that I got in more trouble. So I had a big record release party at one of the spots locally, and a lot of people came out, had a good time, went to the after party, ended up hanging out with the girl that I knew, ended up leaving with her. Long story short, I'm driving the vehicle, no license, marijuana in the car, and I run a red light in the middle of the night, and there's a cop there. So he pulls me over. I didn't even argue with him. I just said, look, man, I'm not even going to blow in that breathalyzer for you or anything like that. Just take me in. So the girl I was riding with ended up pinning the marijuana on me, which at the time I wasn't smoking or anything like that. So I got additional charges. And because of this, I ended up having to do about half a year within a probation detention center, which I like to call mini prison. It's not really prison in the sense of long term, it's just short term prison, anywhere from a few months to 5 years. And you'll get guys from all different systems, right? You'll get some guys that are on the back end of a long stretch in a larger penitentiary. They'll come do the remainder of their time there. You'll get some people who have, you know, violated with the same charge, like DUIs, 3 or 4 times. They'll end up there to do a pretty lengthy sentence. So you get a different conglomeration of a lot of different guys from different walks of life and different charges. So I end up going there, and that didn't really deter me away from the lifestyle I wanted to live. If anything, it gave me the juice that I needed. Well, I've got the jail time to go along with it now. And this was my first time in jail by any stretch. I'd done, you know, day or two here or there before that, but this was my first time doing any kind of length of time. And I'm not here to glorify it because, listen, there are guys who have done way more time than 6 months. But for me at the time, that was a big deal. And it's like the guys in there will tell you, anytime's time away from your family, time away from the real world. And one thing I did make a choice to not do while I was in there was go back for anything like that again. I wasn't going to be away from my daughter who had just been born right before I got locked up. And that was very important for me to be there for her life. So I get out and I attempt to go down a more straight and narrow path. I'm still doing music. I'm still chasing the dream, but I am limiting the amount of trouble I can get into. Now, that's not saying I'm limiting the people around me that are doing some of those things that can get you into trouble, because they're still around. So there were definitely times where things got hairy or things felt hairy, and I was a little worried about, you know, what could happen through that.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
So I get out, and this is when I told you guys that on the My Paranormal Story Time, I talked about this girl who was my son's mom, who had this weird paranormal experience. And this is when I met her. And within about a year, my son's coming along the way. And I am full on into chasing this hip hop dream. I've had some really good connections, but then she and I go through a pretty nasty divorce period for about a year and a half, 2 years. And once we get through that, then I am back pushing, pushing on this music again. At the time, I had custody of my son, so he and I are kind of just rolling together throughout this. And I start creating a new group of friends that are around me. Now, a lot of these guys are what the old slang would be D-boys or dope boys. They sold a lot of dope. And I had some of the other friends that were around us that didn't, but they were pretty scandalous individuals as well. Not to say that I wasn't too, because I was, you know, just as involved with some of these things as they were. But it was all part of me chasing this lifestyle. And as I'm going through this, I'm getting very close multiple times to getting to where I want to musically, but I just can't seem to crack through that particular wall. And at that particular time, the Illuminati craze started happening in hip hop. We started seeing Jay-Z throwing up the rock symbol more and more, and people started connecting that to the Eye of Providence or the eye over the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill, the symbol of the Illuminati. You had all of these other names that were involved in hip hop that were said to have sold their soul to achieve wealth and fame. And not just hip hop, but pop too. It became a big thing. People started getting real interested in symbolism. And I've told you guys this before. I've been looking into conspiracy since I was a kid. And I was very aware when this stuff was happening, what was going on. And at the time, one of my really close friends, he and I were roommates, and he was my hype man on all my shows, and he and I rolled everywhere together. And he and I kind of made a pact one day that, listen, whatever we got to do, whatever we got to sell, if it's our souls to get to that, we're going to get that. So at that point, I started doing everything I could to get to that place, start throwing up all the symbols and any cover art and any music. If I could wear it, I would. And part of that was looking to be a Freemason, because I knew that Freemasonry was kind of the gateway drug to getting into all these other secret societies, or at least that's what I've been reading and seeing, right? So I started looking into how I could do this. And obviously the easiest way to do it is go online and start looking into forums and finding out, you know, what is it I need to do or say? And I found there's a specific phrase that you can say to Freemasons if you know they're one, and you can say it to them, and then they will respond in a way that either they say, okay, well, why do you want to do this or be this, and then offer a way forward, or they'll just turn you down. So at the time, I was waiting at a different restaurant at the time. I bounced around through all kinds of restaurants because it was very easy for me to work my music schedule around that. So I am waiting on a table. And I notice this guy has a polo on and he's got a square and compass with the G in the middle. I knew what it meant. And at the end of the meal, I said the phrase to the guy and the guy shook my hand and he said, listen, here's my card. Give me a call. I told him my situation. I said, hey, look, me and a friend of mine are looking to become Freemasons, and we are looking to find a lodge that will accept us. He said, listen, you guys come out here. We do dinner every Tuesday night before we have our meeting. This is when the general public or potential members can come in. He said, you guys come out here. We'll sit down, talk with you, and then we'll let you know what we think from there. So keep in mind, my best friend at the time is black. He's got dreads down to his shoulders and all tattooed up. I'm tattooed up, and we go to this Freemasonic lodge, and it's all old white guys, all of them. So we get in there. It's a little uncomfortable at first, but the guy that I had talked to initially, he was the worshipful master of the lodge, and he was younger. He was in his 30s, and one of his good friends that was in the lodge was also in his 30s. So they sat down and ate with us. We had a good meal with them. They were really nice. And at the end, he said, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm perfectly fine with you guys coming in here, but I can tell you these older guys who have been in part of the lodge for years and years and years will not be okay with him joining the lodge. And he pointed to my friend who was African-American, and he said that he just would not be allowed to come in. Now, again, he was still leaving the door open for me, but I'm not going to do that. And I told him, listen, neither of us are interested at this point. We understand. Thank you for being honest, because a lot of guys would just tell you to go home and never speak to you again, or have you running around doing God knows what. They didn't. At least they were honest about the situation. And this is how it was in the South at the time. You know, things have changed a lot since those days. But at the time, you had two factions of Freemasonry. You have the what they call mainstream Freemasonry, and then you have PHA, which is Prince Hall affiliated, the Prince Hall Freemasons, which are in the South, typically all black or other ethnic groups that aren't white that are allowed into that particular lodge. Now, at this point, I pretty much know we're not getting into the mainstream lodge. And to preface this, PHA and the mainstream Freemasons are all under the same umbrella coming out of England. So they're both treated the same. When you get up north, especially during that time, they interact with each other fluidly. There's no barrier between them. Now, it's changed a lot in the South now, where they actually do interact a lot now, and you see more ethnic groups becoming mainstream Freemasons now. It's a little more freewheeling than it was when I started out. But at the time, I knew that going the mainstream route was just not going to work, not if we both wanted an opportunity. So I basically was playing the waiting game. I didn't know who to talk to, who to ask. And about a year later, I'm working at a different restaurant this time, and I'm waiting on a table, and it was a table full of black ladies, and they were out on some sort of bachelorette party. And towards the end of the meal, a guy comes walking in, big black dude. He had a wooden chain that was beaded, and then right here was a wooden square and compass that hung from it. So I knew he was a Freemason at that point. And he came in, ended up taking care of the entire bill. And as they were getting up to leave, I walked up to him and I said the phrase. He turned around and kind of smirked at me a little bit and said, "All right, man." He said, "Here's my number. Call me at this specific time and date. I'll talk to you then." So I did. Called him on that time and date. Talked for a while. He asked why I wanted to be a Freemason, why I wanted specifically to be a Prince Hall Freemason. And they'd never had a white man inducted into that particular lodge. And not that there weren't white people that had become Prince Hall Freemasons in the South. There were plenty, but that particular lodge, there hadn't been any. And I told him my story about what happened at the other lodge. He felt very compelled to go to the Worshipful Master there. Ended up meeting with the Worshipful Master there, and they set up a time for us to come in with some other potential members. And we sat down, and basically they gave us the yay or nay, whether they were going to put us through the initiation process or not. And my friend and I were given the okay. So he and I started going through it together, and just for safety purposes, I'm not going to get into the specifics of what I did while being a Freemason. I'll talk about some things as much as possible, but I do want to say that, and I've had people do this over the past 4 years, and they've gotten really angry when I won't go into some specifics of certain things. And they say, "Well, you got to expose. You got to expose. You got to put the light on it." Well, I can be honest with you that a lot of exposing has been done online. So a lot of those things you can find online, number one. Number two, I'm not going to put myself or my family in any kind of possible danger. Not to say that I think specifically any of these guys are coming to get me, but I'm not going to do anything that could possibly put them in any kind of firing squad, metaphorically. There's no way I would do that. But I can at least talk about my personal interactions with becoming a Freemason and what it drove me to now and why I am who I am now. So as we're going through the initiation process, there was a moment where I passed and my best friend failed. And he was essentially kicked out of the initiation process while I was welcomed with open arms. and basically fast-tracked to becoming a master mason, which is third degree. And at that point, you are what they call on the level. So any other Freemason you are on the level with, no matter if they're a 33rd degree or you're a third degree, in theory, you're on the same level. It doesn't mean that you actually are, because obviously when you get to different levels, there's different knowledge that's opened up to you. But I can say too, that once you become a master mason, and this is why I call it the gateway drug in other secret societies, a lot of these other Freemasonic houses open up to you. You can become a Shriner. You can become a Scottish Rite Freemason. There are several others that you can follow, and all those are open up to you. They're open up for me, and I actually had a mind to be able to go through those. I was very much motivated. I passed all of the initiation processes with flying colors. I've always been a bookworm. So to me, when it comes to learning at all, anything, I'm going to learn it thoroughly, which I did. So I become a master mason. I'm getting in good with the Freemasons. It's all part of my plan to use this as a catalyst to get me where I want to musically. But not only that, the esoteric drive part of me was always wanting the knowledge. You know, I say money and power was a motivating factor for me, but it really wasn't. It's really the knowledge, the hidden knowledge that nobody else could have. I wanted that. So I get in there and I know that there are a few guys in there that seemingly to me picked up on why I might be in there. And I want to say this too about Freemasons, because one thing that people don't really know that aren't a part of these groups, they think that everybody that's in there is some evil person and they're part of this evil organization that's taking the world down. That's just the furthest thing from the truth. Most of those guys are in there for good reasons. They are in there for camaraderie, brotherhood, there to help the community. A lot of them are really good people. However, there is a very small percentage that is a part of these organizations that actually know what's going on within the upper echelons of these organizations. Now, I believe there were a couple of guys that were in there that were, well, I do know they were very high ranking, 33rd, 32nd degree Freemasons, who definitely gave up the vibe to me by asking certain questions to me about what my motivations were long term. And I knew that I had, when I was ready, the open door to get where I wanted to go. As a matter of fact, I was told that by several guys, because of my proficiency with learning the knowledges, that I could, as fast as I want to, get where I wanted to go. There was no reins there to hold me back. I could only hold myself back. Now, while this is going on, life hits very, very hard. I went through a very tumultuous time with my son. I went through some more custody and legal battles with he and his mom, to the point that she ended up getting custody back of him. And that just spiraled me out of control. Ended up losing my job, ended up going to jail for not paying child support because I lost my job. And that's a whole nother set of circumstances. But all of these things happened. Now, I can point fingers like I did at the time and say, well, this happened and this happened and this is why I'm in this situation. Partially true. There were some things that happened that were very underhanded, that were connected to some lawyers and some judges that were in cahoots together over some things that got me into trouble, to the point that I lost my son at the time. And then obviously that started the spiraling out process. But if I'm being honest, there were things that I put myself into situations that did not put me in the best position to come out on top in that situation, one plus further on. So I went through a very, very, very dark time, to the point that I really didn't know what I was going to do. And I was at a crossroads. And I knew it because there was an opportunity for me to still follow what I wanted to follow and keep pushing forward with the Freemasons, keep pushing forward with my goals and agendas. But I knew that I would lose my children for good. And I remember my father having a long talk with me right after the whole court fiasco went down. And he told me a lot during that time. But one of the things he told me was, use this period of time to build yourself so that your children can be proud of you when they're older and you can make yourself something that they can look up to that they want to be like. And that really resonated with me. So I pushed forward in continuing to be a part of their lives and at the same time build a career around me. And I stepped away from music for almost 4 or 5 years. I stepped away from music. I mean, I was always writing and stuff. You never lose the music bug, but I pushed away all these other things. I stopped going to the lodge. I just started pursuing a career. So I moved up into management restaurants. I ended up getting out of that, moving into selling houses, which ended up getting me to Cincinnati because I was living in Georgia at the time. Ended up moving to Cincinnati. And I got up here, and again, I'm not even at the point yet where I'm really ready to talk to God. I'm not even on that yet. I'm still in my head, still pursuing some of these things. You know, I still wore the Freemasonic ring. I still wore it with pride because that was a very huge milestone for me that I like to quote unquote flex to other people when I could. And I started pursuing music again when I got to Cincinnati. Now, obviously, the type of music I was doing was very different than what I used to do. However, it wouldn't be anything I would be continuing to do now because I definitely wasn't talking about positive things. It was definitely a lot of negativity and a lot of women and drugs and things in my past. And I glorified a lot of that. Now, as all this is going on, we're moving into 2020 and 2020 happens. Now, even a little bit before that, I started really gravitating towards the idea of God. And what does that actually mean? What does that mean outside of what I've been taught my whole life, right? So 2020 happens and we're all kind of forced to look inward. Everybody's stuck at home. A lot of weird stuff's happening in the world, and people start questioning everything that's going on. And that's when the great conspiracy awakening, as I call it, happened, where all these people, quote unquote, woke up. Now, I don't think that it's been all good. And I think that these days we're seeing a huge negative part of that because people just say whatever and people believe it. They just preface it with, the government doesn't want you to know this. And then whatever they say after that, people believe. And that's kind of where we are now with it. But at the time, I think people were just really starting to wake up. And for me, it wasn't an awakening with what the government was doing or what's going on behind the scenes. I was very aware of that since I was a kid. So that was nothing new to me. The whole 2020, 2021 fiasco that went on, I was very aware of a lot of that on its onset. I knew there were things that weren't right with all of it. And that wasn't the surprise to me. The bigger surprise was when I started looking at God as being someone who actually cared for me as opposed to just some being who really didn't care at all about anything that I wanted or needed, because that was always in my mind frame. You got to do these things and then you're blessed. You got to do this and then you're blessed. But if you don't do this and you start failing, then you're not blessed. And it becomes this vicious cycle. It's like this perfectionist view of Christianity that a ton of Christians have, to the point that, you know, I saw a Christian the other day get mad at somebody's cover art because they felt like it wasn't Christian enough, that it would lead people astray, or somebody put a visual in one of their reels or shorts and a Christian starts complaining about it and saying, well, that might make somebody stumble and fall. That's exactly the mentality that people don't want to have anything to do with Christianity because of all the legalism. And that's exactly what I grew up seeing was a lot of legalism. I'm not necessarily saying for my family either. I'm just saying the environment, right? So when you grow up in that environment of legalism, that every little thing's wrong, then you just want to do what all those things are because you're like, it ain't that bad. So during this 2020 period, I'm starting to find a part of me that wants to find out, you know, what is God in all this? And by chance, one of my producer friends sent one of my songs to, or one of my albums to Tony Merkel from The Confessionals. And he listened to it, loved it, reached out to me. And he and I met up in Philly for a podcast. And he had a live radio show at the time too, ended up doing the show with him as well. And from there, he and I became really good friends. But I will say in that moment, I remember him challenging me and saying, listen, I don't know where you are with God. I know that you have this certain past, but I'm challenging you. Find your way with God and you'll find your way to where you need to go in life. And you're very talented. You have a lot of gifts that you can use if you hone them in the way that they need to be honed in. And I took his challenge on board. And not to say that it was an overnight success. People really get this mentality of what's going to happen when they, quote unquote, become saved or come back to God, and they think it's some instant thing. It's not. It actually took me several years, even working with Tony. Like, I kept seeing new things. I kept growing in different ways. I'm still doing that. So I'm still allowing myself to evolve and change and grow when it comes to God. But that was a huge turning point in my life, but it was a huge process. You know, I went from this very uber Christian family with my dad, who's still a preacher, by the way, and my mom, who was a music minister off and on. And then I went really deep and dark for, man, I could say at least 18 years, right? And I ended up coming out of that in the end, but sometimes it takes certain things to happen to open your eyes. And that's why I'm so patient, so understanding with people who listen to the show, who don't think like me, or who aren't Christians, who don't look at those things in the same way I do, because I know for a very, very long time that I didn't either. You know, during that period of time, when I was becoming a Freemason, I was also chasing the occult wholeheartedly. I had a really good friend of mine. He was, for all intents and purposes, a shaman, and he actually traveled the world and studied with shamans in several mountain ranges. That's all I can really say about that. But he taught me a lot about the occult, taught me how to use Kundalini to unlock my chakras, to then contact entities, taught me how to use tarot, how to read the tarot cards in a way that can help other people see the future or see a future about myself. All of these things I was engrossed in because it was part of this esoteric world that I wanted to understand, and it worked. I did get in contact with entities, and I've talked about some of that on this show already. And it was all part of this process of me trying to become something that was going to then open a door for me to get to this preeminent position I thought that I needed to be in life. The interesting part is that many people can be deceived into thinking that those things are going to get them those achievements, and those achievements never show up. And I know that there was definitely a road for me to get to those achievements, but I needed to sacrifice a lot more than I was willing to sacrifice. And I have to put that a lot on my family for raising me with good morals and not wanting to step out on my children or people that are important to me. And I think that that was also a huge catalyst. A lot of prayer was involved with a lot of people that knew me during that time who were Christians, who were praying for me to come out of the darkness that I was in. And eventually I did. And it still takes time. There, when you go through so much darkness, even when you're out of it, you still get bombarded. And sometimes it can be very challenging or depressing at times, and you just feel like you're sludging through quicksand. I do that from time to time. And the best part about it is knowing that I'm on the right path and that obstacles and roadblocks are just part of the journey. And it's not necessarily a brick wall that's there to stop me forever. But anyway, guys, I really appreciate you guys listening to this podcast today. I know it's a little different than a lot of my very well-researched shows that I do, but I know that several people who have just followed this podcast and don't know a lot about me from previous podcasts haven't really heard my story. And I thought it was important to tell what I could today to give people hope out there that, hey, no matter what situation you're in, you have an opportunity to find God in your way, not some brokered experience like I talk about on the show, by having to go to some priest or whatever else, not by going down some Gnostic rabbit hole of trying to become a God yourself. It's very simple. He's right there. You just talk to him like you're standing in front of him. It's a very simple process. And I hope that some of you guys take that to heart. And I really appreciate everybody who's been giving a lot of love to this show. 5-star reviews everywhere. A lot of great comments. I really appreciate it. It's really helping the show get out there to people that I feel like should get to it. On the way out, I'm going to play my new single, Spinning. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
Sometimes I feel alone when I'm looking at myself, cause I look down a row full of bottles, broken nails. So I just try to call, swerving off the road. I used to do it for the roses, adulation so they notice. Used to say they weren't my focus, lying, chosen for the Joneses things. I know that everything that's going on can start to overwhelm, like the war on terror is just a war within ourselves. Are you woke or are you awake? Genuine or are you fake? I'm feeling like I'm sent by UPS with all the tape. These boxes are all made by delusions that we chase, but I'm just staying base. Snakes are slithering, they keep it snake. She coming with the cake, but how is bait? Is important, but so is what you bring. Cause being real ain't acting like a king. I feel I'm spinning round and about to crash. Chaos all around me, feeling trapped. All this pressure mounts, I wanna crack. Like I'm going around in circles. Like I'm going around in circles. Look at leashes on the collars of these people. Follow monsters like a Mogwai in the water. Then they multiply. It's easy to get bitter. I'd rather dulcify. I'd rather justify anything but selling me. Leave me alone with the mic like a spelling bee. Smoking guns in your face, but you disagree. I ain't have to change your mind. I'm just hoping that you'll listen. I'm just hoping that a little bit of what I'm saying will make you take a second and see that everything ain't adding up. I know it's hard. I know it's hard.
I feel I'm spinning round and about to crash. Chaos all around me, feeling trapped. All this pressure mounts, I wanna crack. Like I'm going around in circles. Like I'm going around in circles. Like I'm going around.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory. The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.